begin with the D word, which is not popular today. D means discipline. And I'll ask, you know, how many people find, I guess, hesitate to say no to your child? Usually it's not the easiest thing to do, right? Come on, admit it. Okay, so the question is, if I ask the question, I think everyone would respond affirmatively. How many people love their children and want to see the best for their children, obviously? Right. So here's a little secret, that sometimes saying no is good for your child. Right? We don't like to believe that in today's day and age. I know a lot of lectures on the thing today, how to say yes to your child, how to love your child, you know, inspire them with self-esteem. These are all great buzzwords, but the reality is sometimes a kid needs to hear no, because that's part of their development. The same way we try to inspire them and, you know, guide them to do positive things, daven, tzedakah, learning, you know, it's also important to tell them to refrain from things which may be wrong, disrespectful, dishonesty, and things like that. So I think there may not be enough of that in today's society. So I want to focus on this unpopular, you know, topic called saying when to know to say no. So the first case, and we're just using the summary sheet, is the famous case of Adoniyahu. So Adoniyahu, as you all know, refresh your memories, you can look it up later when you get home, the story was that he decided he's going to be king. Now, at that time, David was still the king, elderly, getting older, and the goal was that Shlomo would be the melech, but Adoniyahu said, Ani Amloch, right? So, if you look at the Pesukim, it's fascinating. It says, V'Adoniyahu ben Chagit misnaseh leimor Ani Amloch, said, I'm going to be the king. V'yaz lo rechu v'parashim v'chamishim ish v'atzim l'fanav, so you know, he started a little movement, 50 people running in front of him, starting to get the buzz out that he's going to be the king, right? Trying to get the whole entourage. And next, the pasuk says something fascinating, which you don't think is necessarily part of the storyline. And his father never rebuked him. They more to say, why'd you ever do this? You shouldn't have done that. That's wrong. Father never said that. The gam who tov he's younger and he was good looking, so he said, for all those reasons, you know, I'm going to be the man, right? Okay. So here you have the story. Rashi says, fascinating statement. Well, his father never rebuked him, right? Lomich Iso never got him angry. The Lamdecha, to teach you, Shehamonea Tochacha Mibno, person that refrains from giving his kid, which means rebuke. Okay? I have to call it guidance today. Right? Okay? Mevio lidei miso. He ended up killing him. Now, at the end of the story, as you well, Adoniyahu did get killed. But I think Rashi is not talking literally killed. In this case, it was literally killed. It means that the kid never learns right from wrong. And therefore, take an example in society. A kid steals. Okay? So, instead of holding him to task and stall, he did something wrong, right? You know, it becomes okay. So then later on in life, God forbid, if he ends up thinking that stealing is okay, he'll end up doing something wrong, and he will get smacked. He may go to jail. He may be involved in something terrible. In fact, I have a cousin of mine told me an interesting story. He said he used to go to a local candy store out of town to buy the newspapers for Shabbos, newspapers, candy, whatever. One Shabbos, they're walking home. He'd always take his kid, who was 6 or 7 years old at the time. They're walking home hand in hand, and he sees his son has a lollipop. Where'd you get the lollipop? I took it. But we didn't pay for it. And he says he had three possibilities going through his mind at the time. Possibility one, listen, we give the guy a lot of business. We give him a lot of business. He probably charges us a lot of money. So take the lollipop, it's 10 cents, goes back years ago, no big deal. Okay. Case number two, next week when we go back, I'll give him an extra 10 cents. I'll leave it on the counter. That's it. Case number three, we're going back to the store now and you're going to tell the man what you did. Kid was crying, and he did it. And when he grew up, he said, you know, that was the right thing. I learned so much from that little musser that it's wrong. So I think that's what Chazal is saying, that if you give someone guidance, and it is guidance, it's not rebuke to get them angry, but sometimes they're going to walk away from the encounter with mom and dad being a little disappointed, maybe even crying. Not so bad, because they learned something from the experience. So again, if we really do care our kids growing up to be responsible, good Jewish children, part of the training is the chizuk, the positive reinforcement, so wonderful, come with me to shul, we're going to learn, I'll get you ice cream, all that stuff. But also the fact that, no, that's not right. You got to fix it. You got to change it. So I think that's an important part. Okay. Now, the question is, you know, also failing to speak up, that's the next thing on the brief outline. The Rambam says, when he deals with laws of tochacha, how do you deal with people? It's not just children. It's Jewish society. You see someone doing something improper. What do you do? And how do you do it? So he has one rule, which is based upon the Gemara. It says that anyone that has in their hands the ability to prevent someone from doing something bad, and you don't stop them, you're responsible. I guess in secular laws, like aiding and abetting, but it's not just driving the getaway car from the guy who robs the bank. It means to say, I could have stopped the guy and I failed to stop him. So we bear responsibility for that. So we shouldn't take this lightly, thinking, well, I'm not going to say anything. The answer is, if you don't, what are the consequences for him? As we see from Rashi, it could be disastrous. It could be giving him the wrong training. And for you, it's wrong, because the answer is, on a certain level, they interpret that as consent. I remember early years of the yeshiva, 1992. I was talking to the boys about proper conduct during Simchas Torah's first year of the school, a bunch of ninth graders, Simchas Torah's coming up. So I said, listen, Simchas Torah's coming up. It's a wonderful holiday. We should be happy. But remember, it's Simchas Torah. The Simcha revolves around the Torah, spirituality, halacha, Torah. And it's wrong what sometimes happens in some places that, you know, they pick up the chazan. When I was a kid, pick up the chazan, they spin him around. They shoot him with the water gun. And he says, Mashal Rochem Regeshem. They tie up his talus, all the kind of stuff. It's really wrong. After Yom Tov, the kids come back. And one guy says, well, since he's made Aliyah, since he's doing very nicely in Eretz Yisrael, he says, Rabbi, respectfully, I think you're wrong. I said, well, really? He said, because that's exactly what they did in my shul, the Simchas Torah. And the rabbi didn't say anything. Now, was it the president that shot the chazan, you know, with the water gun? Was his contract up for real? I have no idea. But it's strange. So I said, well, maybe you didn't notice, maybe you didn't know. Whatever, but unfortunately, it's interpreted as tacit consent. So if we don't speak up, it's on us as well. And I think what the Rambam is suggesting, the fact that we approve of it, implies that our value system is off. I mean, if I see someone committing a crime and I don't speak up, assuming I could stop him, it means I'm okay with that crime. He just embarrassed someone publicly. He just took something that doesn't belong to him. If I don't speak up, it's not even my property. If I don't speak up to say, hey, you can't do that, it's a shul property. That means say, I'm okay with people taking something from the shul. So I think that's another aspect why it's imperative to speak up, not just to educate them, but also, you know, failure to speak up does reflect upon our philosophy. Interesting. Next thing I want to talk about briefly, and again, feel free to ask questions as we go along. I'll call it the fear factor. I think. I can't read people's mind, and I deal with kids a lot and parents a lot, and there's been a paradigm shift in terms of, to my mind, you know, parents today and, you know, teenagers today. Whereas 25 years ago, good, solid citizens, and whatever my mom and dad say, that's it. As opposed to today, you know, it's like whatever my kid says. I just want him to be happy. If you've heard that refrain, I just want him to be happy. Whatever he wants to be happy, just be happy. There's a certain fear, I think, that parents have in confronting a kid. Because if the kid's going to walk away angry, you feel you're losing his affection rather than it being the other way around, where the kid hopes to get the parents' affection. Today, I think there's a shift that we want to get the kid's affection. So we're afraid to say no, right? And I'll tell you a case happened recently, obviously no names. Young man, Matt, was coming late to Minyan on a pretty regular basis, sometime on time, sometimes a little later, and doing stuff, nothing major, sometimes no tzitzis, you know, teenage stuff, right? So it came to the point where we called on the mom and dad. And said, look, you know, we're concerned. If he wants to be here, this is what we believe in. We hope you believe in. I hope you'll be partners. And we need to speak to him about these issues. And we should think if we speak to him, we're all on the same page. He'll say, yeah, I'm going to come to Minyan on time. And the parents made it very clear, you're right, but we don't want to turn him off. We don't want to turn him off. If we're going to insist that he comes to Minyan on time, it's not going to be good for him. So it's going to turn him off. I said, look, that's our responsibility as parents, educators, to kind of bring to mind what he's doing right, and he's a good boy, and what he's doing wrong, what can be improved upon. And they were, like, deathly afraid adamant, we should not do this. So I said, you know what? Let's call him in. He was waiting on something. Let's call him and see what he says. So call in. We'll call Moshe. Barrel, Chaim, whatever. Chaim, you know why you're here? Yep. Why? He says, because I don't come to Minyan on time, and sometimes I don't wear tzitzis. So that was easy. Right. So again, the parents who were so deathly afraid of bringing this up because he's going to get turned off saw that there's a lot of things you could do to a kid if you put your own fears aside. And you do it intelligently, which we'll talk about in a second. So then you can make a lot of progress in terms of what we'd all hope is the right way to bring up a child. So I think you have to put the fear factor aside and not be afraid in terms of, you know, what the reaction is. And if the kid, you know, storms away, you have to assess it. Sometimes that's okay. Because an hour later, they're still going to knock on your door, can I borrow the car keys? What's for dinner? Or whatever. So I think you have to be realistic about that. Now, next five, in terms of effective methods, again, I think, you know, the best way to decide anything as Torah Jews is to look at the Torah, look at the halakhas. Nothing I'm saying is revolutionary. Perhaps today it's not as popular as it was or understood as well as it was 20, 30 years ago. But it's basic stuff. By the way, I once showed a group of people a poster, which you could probably get online, which was education in the 1950s and education today. So it's true. There was no technology back then, and no smart boards, and no smartphones. True, big differences. But there's another major difference. In the 1950s, there's a drawing. The mother, the father, and the teacher pointing to the kid, saying, why are the grades so low? Now, it's the mother, the father, and the kid pointing to the teacher. Why are the grades so low? And the kid's standing there like this. Mm. Like, no problem, right? My parents on my back no matter what I do. So that's chaval in the sense that the kid feels he doesn't have to, you know, correct any mistakes that he can't correct. So effective methods, and this again is based upon the halachos of Hochech, Tochicha, Samisecha. Rebuke, it says it twice. Right? Your fellow Jew, which means children as well. Spouses, people, again, has to be done properly with Daruch Eretz and with Sechel. So the parameters that the Rambam sets forth is as follows. Number one, if you speak to someone about something they're doing wrong, do it quietly, between you and them. No reason to raise your voice, no reason to scream, to badger. Do it quietly, number one, and don't embarrass them. Number two, make sure that the way you do it, it's clear that it's litovaso. I'm doing this for your benefit. Which means, I think it's a very, very important point, there's no agenda involved. When a kid picks up that there's an agenda involved, and kids have, I call it antennas, they can pick up psychological, a sense of what's going on. They think, well, my parents were really screaming at me because X, whatever the agenda may be, they may want to assert power. It may be a power struggle. It may be control. It may be they're trying to send me a message, I'm not as good as my sibling, whatever the case is. It should really be the issue itself. Purely the issue itself, divorce yourself, and it's hard, from any other factor, any other agenda you may have, and focus purely on what the kid is doing and how he can improve. It will be done in a loving manner, of course. The tovaso, I'm here to bring this to your attention. You could have done better on it. You didn't do well, let's figure out what you could do better. I'm your partner. I'm your parent. I'm someone that can help you. I have more experience. So you didn't do well on the test, or you made a particular mistake. Let's discuss what we can do better. Can you figure out on your own what is it that brought you to this point? And hopefully, if it's done that way, in a non-confrontational manner, so the kid will be buying, and the kid will understand it. I'm not here, I'm not confronting you, it's not me against you, especially in today's day and age, right? We're working together collaboratively with the understanding that I am the parent, and I have more knowledge, and I have more experience, and I'm going to point things out to you that you may not have seen on yourself. So I think that's the method that the Rambam elucidates when he talks about the mitzvah of Hochech, Tochicha, Samisecha, you know, how to best be effective with a child and with everybody else as well. Next, when to be silent. And the when to be silent shouldn't be the default, and I think sometimes it is. Like, I'm afraid to confront the kid, and if I'm not going to say anything, what's going to happen? He's going to be upset, and, you know, whatever the case is. When to be silent, there's one rule. Will you be effective or not? And in judging that, I think there's two parts to that. Whether the kid is receptive, whether the kid is willing to listen, and if not, okay, like any other Hochei, I'm going to tell you, don't do X. You're going to listen, you're not going to listen anyway. So I'm not obligated to push myself and get into an argument with you because you're not going to listen anyway. Number two, are you the right person to bring it to their attention? Which means to say, it may be that someone else is a better person to do it, bring it. Sometimes you get a call from them, listen, I'm not happy my son's doing X, Y, Z, can you talk to him? Okay, so I'll talk to him. Another rabbi, you'll talk to him. So someone else who's, quote, more neutral, where there's not this emotional tension going on, might be more effective in terms of delivering a message. But the only reason to refrain is for those reasons. One reason only, it won't be effective. It won't be effective either because the kid won't listen, won't be effective because you're not, so to say, the right shliach. But if you're convinced it won't be effective, at that point, you have no obligation. But if you could be effective, like I said before, the Rambam and the Gemara says, if you could be effective and you refuse to do so because you're afraid, then that's wrong. In fact, the halacha is, you have to tell the person, hochech tochich, rebuke, rebuke, means double, means until you get the job done, and the halacha is until they hit you. Doesn't mean they have to hit you. Certainly a kid can't hit a parent, right? But it means say, you, that's in clear indication not gonna, they're not interested, they're not going to listen. If they're not going to listen anyway, then that would be the only reason to abstain. Now, number seven, public opinion. Well, all my friends are doing this. All my friends are going this place. Well, I don't think it's right for you to go. Well, all your friends jumping off the roof. I think we've heard that line before, right? So I think, again, you have to be pragmatic about this, which is, if that became the new standard in society, and I personally think that our standards are certainly heading on a downward slope, and the reality is it's accepted, and the reality is he's not going to listen to you, manasseh. But if it's just popular, and that's, I want to do it because it's popular, I think that is something specifically to speak out against, because I think we all realize what we're really intending when we said to your friends jump off the roof, we're really saying don't follow popular opinion. The distinction of a successful person in any area is, I'm going to stand up for what's right. Just talking about this to a group of people. Moshe Rabbeinu, look at what Moshe Rabbeinu went through. Last three parshios, with the fights with the Mon and the Slav and the Meraglim, and now we want to nip Narosh and Oshum. That's fine. Let's go back to Egypt. Let's get another leader. Korach, get rid of Moshe Rabbeinu. Wow, what's he need this for? But the answer is he kept persisting because this was right. He understood he had a mission. He understood the mission is to do this, and I got to do it because I'm right. So the strength of a successful person and a Torah Jew is that I stand up against the popular tides. I think if a kid just wants to give in to popular opinion, that's another whole discussion in terms of not going with the sway of the crowd, but being strong enough to speak up for what you truly believe in. But if it gets to the point where, again, unfortunately, and I'm not saying it happens that often, but it can, where that is the norm, and you know, sometimes I'll even ask a rabbi. Rabbi says, well, that's what everyone else is doing. You're not going to be successful at that point. You know, it may not be the smart thing to confront. And last thing I want to mention is you're being watched. Yes.
Where are the cameras?
They're right there. Well, the Russians are hacking the room. Right, there you go.
The cameras?
But, right. Well, the truth is, you know, imagine if that was the case. So when Pirkei Avos says, there's an eye that watches and an ear that hears, meaning a Kadosh Baruch Hu, we should look at, like, there really is a camera, and there really is a bugging device, and right, there is a technology that's, you know, that's watching our every move, and perhaps we would say or modify your behavior in a certain way. But what I mean to convey here is the message we have with the kids has to be 100% consistent. I mean, you tell a kid, you shouldn't talk in shul, and you talk in shul, you're lost, right? So you're being watched means the message has to be consistent. I remember Rav Aaron Soloveitchik Zatzal quoted a pasuk. It says that Avram inspired his household to go after him. He says, why did it say to go after him? It should be to follow the Derech Hashem. He said, to give a lecture on following the Derech Hashem, no one's listening. But to go after him means if you're doing it, you're davening, you're giving tzedakah, and you're acting that way, your kid looks up to you when he's a small kid and older. Yeah, it's a consistent message. So therefore, I think whatever we tell our kids is a value system we have to live by, and by living by it, hopefully we'll be successful. Okay? 12:20 on the dot. I was told to finish 10 minutes early. Okay, any quick questions? Yeah, please.
Yeah, I just have a question. When you said, it's the standards have gone down, it's not like just like a popular thing at that moment.
Right.
So, like, that is sometimes a problem. So, like, is there any way, though, like, to try to talk to your son or daughter if, like, it's not just the teenagers doing it, but the whole, like, the adults are?
You certainly have to try. Look, I'd say,
how do you? But they really don't see it as wrong because it's not just kids doing it; it's adults doing it as well. And
right,
you have a different standard, let's say, from your the way you grew up.
Right.
And you're trying to, you know, pass that down.
So I think you have to, you know, case. I said you'd have to look into the issue. If it's a halachic issue, there's no negotiation with halacha. Halacha is halacha, right? There may be certain things which are not halachic, but I prefer to do. In which case, you have to pick your battle. So if what they're doing technically is mutter, which sometimes you have those types of things, and everyone else is doing it, and especially the type of thing you can ask, sometimes you ask a rabbi. Say, I wouldn't fight on this. It may not be worth the fight. So you'll have to look at the particular thing. But I think there's certain things when you're going to have to tell them, listen, despite the fact that everyone else is doing it, it's still not right. That doesn't make it right.
And so, and what if they still don't accept that? What if it is a
Well, again, it's going to get down to one thing.
Everyone else is doing it, so that's something I should wrong with.
Right, so again, I think that's one of the biggest challenges we have today, and I guess always confronted, where people can find justification in other people's behavior, and everyone else is doing it. Mom, why do you have to be the only one that says, no, everyone else is going to this event, I want to be able to go too. If you're not going to win the battle, if it's realistic that you're not going to be able to impact them, then you have to do your best, at least to let them know, okay, sometimes you can say let them know with a caveat, a little asterisk next to it, here's my concerns, and then, put certain, requirements on it. Someone just talked to someone yesterday, he told this kid, when you start driving, I'm giving you my car, my gas, my insurance, you get to where you're going, you call me. This goes back years ago, before cell phones. So his son went somewhere, and there was no payphone, didn't call. Kid came home, said, no more car. So you can make conditions, so to say, using your judgment, meaning I'll let you go, but, and you have to use your judgment. You have to be case specific. You have to know the relationship and the dynamics with each kid is going to be different. But hopefully, in some cases, and I think it's harder today than it was when we all grew up, if a parent expresses his displeasure, the kid would say, yeah, I really want to go, but my parents won't let me. I don't know how much that works, but, there still is a vestige of that, yes.
And sometimes kids are hesitant.
Right.
They want you to say no.
That's true. That's a very good point. Right. That's true. They want you to say no, and, they are looking to us for guidance. So that's kind of what our job is. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rebbe. Thank you. You're the winner. I'm going to ask you a little bit.
I apologize. I'm very crazy familiar.
They're not doing a good job.
No. I can't take it anymore. Oh.
It's not a joke.
It's not a joke.
It's the name and everything.
Oh. Okay.
It's supposed to be mamshes. It's still there, but it's mamshes. It's cool.
I'm sorry,
let's see,
stop you. Okay.
For lack of better words, if something happens and they say that you didn't take care of your employees, you allowed to do a group house without a medical, right. You understand what that means?
Right.
$200 a year, you don't have to pay for it.
Right.
Money's not the issue.
Right.
Let's see what we're talking about. And all
okay.
I need is the birthday.
Okay, got it. Okay. Now I know
you're looking for it. Anyway, some of my guys.
Yeah. see you.
Okay, we'll see you.
I loved it.
Okay.
Enjoy your engagement.
What's that?
How do you think you stop it?
I finished on time, right? 12:20?
Yeah, but how do you think you stop it?
No, they said 12, they said finish 10 minutes early.
Okay. What's that? How do you think you turned it off?
What's that?
It's still recording.
Yeah.
The person who set it up didn't show you how to turn off the recording device.
Okay.
Yeah. They didn't tell me, they just said the recording.
Okay.
Oh, you didn't discuss the recording?
No, I saw